Bouncing Back podcast with me, James Middleton. We are on episode number 19. And I know exactly what you're thinking. James, where have you been, man? This has taken so long to get back onto this podcast, and we've been waiting for ages. What's happened? And I feel like I've been in a relationship and I've just ghosted the person and disappeared unannounced. And the sad reality is it's sort of what I've done. So I do apologize for that. I am back now. I'm going to deliver the best podcast episode you've ever heard as a result. And we're going to have lots of fun and talk about some really interesting and exciting things today. Very thought-provoking episode this. But there's no excuses, really. I think this podcast, for me, is actually more of a hobby than something that I see as work. I know how much value it provides you guys and also myself, you know, reading about these topics, learning about them. And sometimes in our life, hobbies have to take a back seat and we have to prioritize making a living and working. And over the last month or so, I've been away. I went to Mexico with my new girlfriend. Woo-woo! I know. And all my podcast episodes have paid off talking about relationships and being single. And yeah, I've just had a lot of work in the way that I've had to prioritize some really exciting things and big projects that are launching in the new year. And I can't believe I'm saying in the new year. It's almost 2022. I feel like not that long ago it was 2019, and now it's 3 years later. It's scary. I sometimes don't even know what day it is. I've lost it. So I don't know what day it is. I don't know if I'm coming, if I'm going. For all I know, it could be a Sunday, it could be a Tuesday. It doesn't really matter to me. It all kind of blurs into one. I don't know if you feel the same. I know a lot of my friends and family have also expressed the same feeling. But yeah, lots of exciting things going on. So that's a good thing. And I have actually been thinking about this podcast a lot. It's almost like my little baby that I've neglected, but I'm back now. But there are some exciting things coming in the new year, which you'll see. One of them is I've done some big revamps to my online coaching platform so that I can give my clients the best possible service ever. I've been doing my life coaching course, which is awesome and so exciting. So I can't wait to become a fully qualified life coach and start pouring out everything that I know to helping my clients as well. But anyway, I'm rambling. Let's get to the topic of this podcast. And today I'm going to be talking about self-love and codependency. I didn't know what codependency really was until a couple of weeks ago when I started reading more about it and saw it as a big component of self-love. And for me, I mean, self-love, everyone knows what that is, and I will go into that in more detail. But self-love, probably one of the most important things that we as people and humans can have and focus on developing and growing as much as possible. And there's that saying that in order to love or be loved by anyone else, you have to love yourself first. Don't ask me who said that. I haven't got a clue, all right? But it's true, right? From my short time as a professional coach, and like I said, hopefully soon to be a fully qualified life coach, I have witnessed that many of my clients have lacked in this department. They lack self-love, and as a result, they experience a lot of problems in their life. They lack self-love, they lack self-respect, and they rely on external factors. Their partner, their job, their friends, their kids, basically everything around them but themselves to feel loved or to feel appreciated. Now, I'd say there isn't necessarily anything wrong with having love or appreciation come from outside of you, from these external factors. In fact, I think it's a wonderful thing to feel this kind of emotion from the ones we love and feel like we're seen and recognized and heard from external things. However, becoming solely reliant on it and only looking outward to feel this way and to feel validated or loved or whatever it may be is dangerous, and it can be dangerous because you can very quickly become dependent on relying on external things for your own validation and to feel worthy or loved. Now, there are two issues with this, okay? The first is that you cannot live without whatever it is that you're giving, that's giving you validation, and you become very, very dependent on it. You need it more and more just to feel normal and feel like your head is above the water. Kind of like a heroin addict trying to chase that feeling, that first feeling they get when they take that first hit. They never get there again, but they keep doing it because they just need to do it to feel kind of normal. The second problem is once that external source stops giving you that feeling, providing you with that feeling, or more importantly, gets taken away from you, you're left with this gaping hole to fill. And this can sometimes lead to desperation. And with desperation often comes irrational behavior. And let's be honest, we want to avoid acting irrationally as much as we can. I think there is also a tendency to then fall back into this idea, which I will talk about, this concept of codependency. But again, something that we want to avoid as much as we can. So I'm going to talk about self-love now, and then I'm going to come on to talking about codependency, because I think you'll find, once you know a little bit more about it, that you might be in that situation, you might know people in that situation. Again, with my podcast, it's all just kind of giving you this awareness and insight into these kinds of things so that you can walk away and just be thinking about it and recognize things and patterns of behavior. So to me, self-love resembles someone who is very, very comfortable in their own skin. They love themselves for who they are, they're happy with who they are, and they generally don't depend on anything outside of themselves to feel this way, nor do they allow anything external to validate them, or do they go looking for validation in different places, like a partner or a job or with friends, to name a few examples. A lot of people ask me what I think is a key component of self-love and how I feel people build up this trait inside them. I get questions like, James, how do I love myself more? What can I do to feel more secure in my own skin and be happy and just love myself for who I am? I really struggle with loving myself for who I am. Now, I wish there was a straightforward, simple answer, but there isn't. As with anything, it's complicated. Like with many character traits, they're usually built up through experiences and a repetition of responding to situations in life that then become cemented into our personality. I think on the one hand, a lot of people develop particular personality traits through experiences. So the whole nurture argument, for example, the environment they've grown up in and been exposed to as a child. Again, I'll come onto this more later, but who they've hung out with, their friends, schools they've gone to, their parents. And a lot of people develop personality traits through nature. So this is the classic nature nurture argument. The nature one, you know, you're born a certain way with a certain chemical hardwiring. Another factor that makes us all different. Now, I'm a big believer that yes, we are all born with certain personality traits. There is a chemical wiring that sets us all apart from each other and makes us all unique. However, I am also a believer that the environment we grow up in and what we're exposed to, particularly as a child, massively impacts how we are as adults. Now, without going into too much of things like childhood trauma, which can massively impact who we become as an adult and how we behave and feel about ourselves, I want to just cast aside that for a moment. There is always, always room to become the person you want to become, no matter what experiences you've had growing up. A lot of that can come down to unlearning certain things. I'm actually reading this book at the moment called Think Again by Adam Grant, and it's all about this, the idea that actually, in order to learn and in order to develop as a person, we also sometimes need to unlearn things that maybe we've learned in the past, unlearn bad habits, how we feel towards certain things, etc. And on this, I'm a big believer in having a growth mindset, this is who I am, but this is who I want to become, rather than having a fixed mindset when you say, I am who I am and nothing is going to change. This is me, take it or leave it. Because often the latter prevents people from ever growing out of this labeled shell that maybe society, something external, maybe even themselves have given to themselves. And that kind of attitude can be a very toxic and damaging world to live in and exist in, not just to the person themselves, but to anyone around them. I think self-love as a result of this can be complicated. It's not just a case of saying, look, just love yourself for who you are and then you'll be happy. You can't just sit down with someone who has low self-esteem and is really struggling with confidence and doesn't love themselves and looks in the mirror and doesn't like what they see. It's very difficult for you to just say, just love yourself, you're amazing. It doesn't quite work like that. As with anything, it comes to a lot of work and focusing on developing and growing as a person, and it takes a lot of thought for the individual, a lot of effort and consistency to involve and improve the things that they need to improve to become, you know, happier and all round better individuals. But as with anything, the first thing is just recognizing what that is and what you need to work on and patterns of behavior that you do that might need changing. However, one thing that I find has helped me and also my clients when it comes to developing self-love is the concept that self-love is actually a byproduct of self-discipline and self-respect. If we live a lazy, undisciplined life and we just give into our feelings and we act on these emotional impulses, we're going to make very poor choices that we will regret later on. We would be much better off to just discipline ourselves right now so that later on we don't have to carry this big load of regret around with us. And discipline in this instance isn't self-punishment. It should never actually be about self-punishment. And a lot of people think disciplining yourself is punishing yourself and being harsh on yourself. It's not. I find that when presented with the term discipline, a lot of people do see this as a form of punishment. So what I usually say to people is that it's not. Self-discipline in this instance, and a lot of cases, is actually the definition of self-love. Self-love, when you say that you love yourself, it means that you have behavior towards yourself that is loved, right? So if you say to yourself, as an example, hey, look, I know you want to eat that cake because it's Susan's birthday and it'll be really good. Just look how good it looks. It's a Colin the Caterpillar cake, your favorite. But I can't let you eat that because if you eat that cake, you're going to feel bad after. And I love you way too much, James, to let you eat that. So discipline here is not in the sense of punishment, but in the sense that you forego this immediate pleasure for the exchange of long-term self-respect. And the reason why people struggle with this so much is because they don't see long-term, they're short-visioned. Self-love is, it's basically saying, hey, look, again, another example. Look, I know you've got a really important test tomorrow or a really important presentation, and I know you really want to go out tonight because it's your friend's birthday, your best friend's birthday, but if you fail that test, if you mess that presentation up, you're not going to feel good about yourself. And I love you too much, James, to let you go out tonight and make that happen for yourself. Again, self-discipline here, it's simply just self-love. And it's one way and one step towards showing yourself love and building up your self-worth by acting in a way that has your best interests at heart. Not your partner's, not your friends, not people on social media, but for yourself, doing things for yourself. And that word selfish has just popped into my mind. A lot of the time it's used negatively and it has negative connotations, but I am a massive fan of the word. You have to be selfish if you want to develop self-love. Not all the time, granted, there are times where actually being selfless is very important, but choosing to be selfish when it matters. From a personal perspective, I remember that day so clearly when I just started doing things for me and protecting myself and my self-worth and acting in a way that was showing myself love. And when I started doing this, my life suddenly became a whole lot better and I started feeling a whole lot happier with myself. Now, I am a fairly selfless person. I care incredibly about my close circle, my people who are around me, my friend, my girlfriend, my close friends. I have a very, very small circle and I like it that way. And I, a lot of time, will do anything for them if they need to. But before that, I was putting everyone else first before me. Because, yeah, it made me feel good helping other people, but I was suffering as a result. And my self-love, let's call it a muscle, my self-love muscle was depleting because I wasn't doing enough things for me. Constantly doing things for other people and what other people wanted and kind of almost living up to the standards of those around me. Now, I'm living up to my own standards. The standards I hold to myself and doing things for myself, actions that lead to growing my own self-worth and self-love and self-respect and self-esteem. And it's the only way that you can develop those traits. You have to put yourself first and prioritize that. I remember I used to get FOMO so bad. And for those living in the 19th century, FOMO stands for fear of missing out. Little bit of lingo for you. I know all the young kids will understand, but maybe a couple of you oldies. I'm not even going to define what oldie is, but you might not have heard of it. But FOMO, fear of missing out. When my mates went out, or there was a party or any kind of social event, several years ago, I'd have to be there. Because I'm a very social person. I thrive off social events. I love going out and being around people. But it killed me. It was ruining my own priorities and what I truly valued in my own life. My work, waking up feeling good and fresh, being productive, my mental health. Now, my other friends didn't care about that. They didn't care about what I wanted in my life. No one really does. They just wanted me to be there for the fun because it made their night better if I was there. Yeah, I'm very good company, right, on a night out. So I did take that part as a compliment. But it was happening at the detriment of my own self-love and my own self-respect. So from that moment, and I could see this, I could feel it happening to me, I started to become more selfish and say no to things. And I decided to do things that had my own best interests at heart and not others. I wasn't trying to please other people as much anymore. And as soon as I started doing this, things in my life started happening. I felt better about myself. I started to love myself more, respect myself more, not fear missing out at all, because I had stuff I had to get done the next day, which I valued so much more. I now value my work, my craft, helping people, making money, doing things for myself so much more than what I used to. And I'm in such a better place mentally because of it. And I used to get stick for it. I still sometimes do, because a lot of my friends still, you know, work in the city or work for businesses where they go out a lot during the week in the evenings, and on the weekends they completely, you know, can relax and blow off steam because they don't have any work to think about. And that's cool. That's completely cool. But as someone who's not in that environment and in that position, I had to change. I couldn't keep up with what they were doing and still focus on myself and what I wanted. So I had to draw a line. And it's that thing of setting boundaries. I set boundaries for myself. And now I'm reaping the rewards for that. And I look at some of my friends and where they are in their life, and I look at my life and where I am, and I am so thankful that I did become more selfish. And I'm not saying that because, you know, I'm doing better than my friends or I'm above my friends, not at all. I just prioritize different things that make me happy. My friends prioritize, some of them prioritize going out drinking and getting drunk every weekend, and that's cool because that's their life, and you know, if it makes them happy, I'm never going to interfere with that. And I love joining in sometimes, but that's when you have to be selfish and not just follow the crowd and put yourself first. And if you do that, you'll never regret it, because you'll see that you'll start achieving things in your life. The right friends, the right people will stick around and be by your side and understand it. And the wrong people won't. And that's cool. Let the people who don't understand it or mock you or whatever, let them drift. You might find your circle become smaller, but that's also okay. So long as you stay true to yourself and what you value, because that is where a lot of contentment comes from. And that's where you start to feel so comfortable in your own skin, with your own company, and loving yourself for who you are. If you want to be happy, you have to love yourself, right? Which means that part of this comes down to disciplining your behavior. I honestly believe that the road to sustained happiness is through disciplining your behavior. Something as simple as food and eating or going to the gym and training, it's not about your body as much as it is about your mind. It's getting command of your mind to be able to choose actions that are in your own best interest. And the more you exercise this, the more you do things for your own best interest and bring value to your life and what you want, the stronger that process becomes. And it's like that self-love, the way I described it, as a muscle. The more you train it, the more you do things for yourself to build that up, the stronger that muscle becomes. I think as well, another big component of this is the idea of self-control, having self-control. It takes self-control to decline nights out with friends, to say no to a drink when you don't want it, to decline that slice of cake, Colin the Caterpillar cake, my bloody favorite. It takes self-control, because what it means is you're taking whatever it is that you value seriously. People generally with better self-control are happier and healthier because they're not always succumbing to the pressures and temptations around them, which can end up dictating your life and the way it moves. You have to have this firm grasp of the reins. And I always think about my life, like I like to think I'm on like one of those chariots, you know, in Gladiator, that he's riding with the horses with my shining armor. I know I big it up as well, you know, my sword, but I have a grip of the reins. And you want to try and hold these reins as tight and be in control of it as much as possible. Naturally, of course, the reins sometimes slip. The grasp becomes weaker. We're human beings, we're not robots. But it's about ensuring that most of the time you are in control of the way this chariot that you're riding is moving, the way your life is moving. And the people who do, the people with more self-control, tend to also have things like stronger relationships and better career success. They also manage stress better. They live longer. They steer clear of bad habits. And why? Why, you may be asking, like, how? Why is this happening? Why do they have all this? Because self-control ultimately allows us to keep our commitment to ourselves. Self-control allows us to keep our commitment to ourselves. And that is one way, or one of the ways, we can practice self-love and grow into someone who is so happy and at peace with themselves. They don't need anyone or anything to validate them to feel loved. And it all comes from within. And when you're in this position, it's incredibly powerful. It's incredibly powerful. Not just from an outside perspective, but from an inside perspective. You will feel like you can do anything. Right. Now I want to go on to the topic of codependency, because to me, there is most of the time a direct correlation between being codependent and the amount of self-love you have for yourself. And also, by now, you guys know that I love talking about relationships and how human behavior can impact them. So we're going to kind of steer down a slightly different path now and go on to talking about relationships and where codependency fits in there. But first of all, you might be wondering, hold on, James, what is being codependent? I've got no idea what that word is. So codependency, I'm going to try and give the most simple and clear definition. Come on, James, you've got this right. Codependency refers to a psychological construct involving an unhealthy relationship that people might share with those closest to them. So it was originally thought to involve families of substance abuse, okay? The term codependent described people living with or in a relationship with an addicted person, so someone addicted to drugs or alcohol, whatever it may be. But it has since then grown to include other types of dysfunctional relationships. A more modern understanding of codependency now actually refers to it as a specific relationship addiction characterized by preoccupation and extreme dependence whether that be emotional, social, and sometimes physical, on another person. I wrote that down, by the way. There is no way I would remember that. I knew I would forget that because that sounds a little bit complicated. You might still be thinking, James, just can you just talk some sense here? You'll get this, trust me. It's quite a complicated thing, but it's not when I explain it, and I'm going to do my very best, all right? So the concept of codependency, it still applies to families with substance abuse issues, but it's also used to refer to other situations too. And the main consequence of it is that codependents are busy taking care of others and they forget to take care of themselves, resulting in a disturbance of identity development. And this is why self-love is such an important factor in our lives, because a lot of the time, those who don't love themselves for who they are can very often fall into the category of becoming codependent. Now, there was a time where codependency tried to get defined under the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. However, it was unsuccessful, I think, due to the fact that people who were codependent didn't actually have any symptoms that suggested it for being a disorder. So to sum it up, here we go. To sum it up, codependency is basically a psychological concept that refers to people who feel extreme amounts of dependence on certain loved ones in their lives and who feel responsible for the feelings and actions of those loved ones. That's your history lesson over. Let's get into the exciting stuff now. So the best way to learn about codependency is to actually have a look at the signs of it and what it can actually look like. So some of the things are low self-esteem, low levels of narcissism, experiencing depression, anxiety, stress. Then some others are having a hard time saying no. If you're someone who has a hard time saying no, if you have poor boundaries, if you're constantly feeling compelled to take care of people, if you're having a need for control, especially over others, having trouble communicating honestly, feeling a need to be liked by everyone, feeling a need to always be in a relationship and denying one's own needs, thoughts and feelings. Now, I know what you're thinking. You might be thinking, damn, some of those things that James has just said describe me. I definitely experience some of those things. Does this mean I'm codependent? Don't worry. We all will experience some of these things that I've just mentioned. Everyone experiences some form of anxiety or stress, for example, and sometimes we might struggle to communicate honestly with people. However, if you feel you experience a significant number of the others, then it is worth having a little self-reflection and doing a bit of your own research to see if maybe you are someone who is codependent, because many people are, and many people go through life being so without even realizing. And as with anything psychological, there are things you can be doing and methods to be following that can help you come out of being this way. Remember, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist, I'm a coach, all right? And so if you do want to do more research or see a professional, I would highly advise doing so if you want to get a further understanding of this whole topic and your own character. But I want to give you an example of where a case of codependency can happen, and I think this will really clear things up for you. So let's say someone is significantly overweight, okay? In this context, we're going to pretend that my partner is the overweight one. And they're craving unhealthy food, okay? That they're so overweight, they're sitting on the sofa, they can't really move, they're craving unhealthy food, desperate for a massive Big Mac, large family meal all to themselves. There are two sides of being codependent. I am someone who is codependent. And in this instance, my self-worth comes from being the fixer in the relationship, okay? Now, the irony is that I'm not actually fixing anything. Here's why. So my partner wants food, and I, the fixer or the enabler, I don't actually want to help them lose weight or tell them the truth about their diet and encourage them to eat something healthy. I only want to ease my partner's pain in this moment and say, oh, listen, I don't want you suffering. I don't want you going hungry or to be moody or angry at me. I want you to be comfortable, okay? So I'm going to get you your food. I'm going to go get you your Big Mac meal. However, I then go and get them the worst food possible because I'm enabling this habit of theirs to continue with eating unhealthy food. But my partner's happy with me. they feel like I'm fulfilling their needs of their relationship. They feel like they're depending on me and they can't live without me. And as a result, I feel happy. I'm satisfied. I feel needed. And my self-worth comes from being the fixer in the relationship, even though ultimately I'm not fixing anything. Now, if you look at this from a narcissistic standpoint, me being the narcissist here, if you are dating a narcissist, you're pretty much letting that person get away with really dysfunctional behaviors and allowing them to get angry when you don't do what they say or follow their wishes, and you allow them to push anyone else close to you out of your life so they can have complete control. It's all about control for a narcissist. You're not standing up to them, you're not setting boundaries, because your number one need as someone who is also codependent is to feel needed. And you would put that need above absolutely anything else. So in a less extreme example, it would be like allowing your partner to walk all over you with the things that you know aren't right or fair on you. But because you are so dependent on them to make you feel good about yourself, and you know they look after you as well as take care of you, you let them get away with this behavior. And this is actually quite common in a lot of relationships. Now, if you look at this from the perspective of someone who's very, very comfortable in their own skin and really loves themselves and is happy with who they are, they're not going to find themselves in this situation, because they find their self-worth in other areas, and their self-worth comes from within. They're not reliant on someone else for it. However, if you are someone who has low self-esteem and you struggle to say no, you deny your own thoughts, your own needs, feelings, characteristics essentially of someone who is codependent, then you might very well find yourself in this position. So how does this start for people? How do you fall into becoming someone who is codependent? Well, one of the ways it begins is during childhood. It's often that a child sees their parents in that situation where one is the enabler and one is the person who really needs to be needed and wanted and doesn't stand up to the other person. So the other person is either someone who might have an addiction or is a narcissist, or maybe even someone who is battling something in their life. And the thing with narcissists is they're not aware that they might be battling something. They're the ones that run the show. They control everything around them. They make everything about them, whether they intend it or not. If we look at a hypothetical example, and let's say you're a kid in a situation growing up, or you're a teenager and your parent is an alcoholic, okay? So we'll look at this. So they're an alcoholic, but they consider themselves to be a, inverted commas, functioning alcoholic, in the sense that they feel they can still live their life and still go to work and still do things despite their alcohol dependency. Now, as a child, you know that from seeing your parents and knowing, or parent in this case, and knowing that alcohol is bad for them, you want to tell them that there's no alcohol in the house and that you've hidden it. But if you do this, the parent gets in a very bad mood, or might get in a very bad mood, and they'll start yelling at you or acting out, being verbally abusive or acting in a way that just simply isn't pleasant at all for you. So now as a teenager, you still want to fix the problem because they're your parent and you love them. But your solution is now, okay, I want to make you feel better and I'm going to pacify this and I'm going to find you some alcohol, right? Because I know that's going to make you feel better and I know that's going to stop you shouting at me and you're going to be okay. So the teenager has fixed the problem in the short term because the parent now feels better and more relaxed and they still think they're functioning, of course. Everything is fine. They've got their alcohol. But in reality, in the long term, the teenager is not helping them at all. The problem is still there. And with this idea of codependency, it's you're not responsible for anything. You're not responsible for helping this person in the short term. And you're definitely not responsible for helping them in the long term. But for your self-worth and someone with this codependency, your self-worth is on fixing the problem. But you only have the tools to fix the problem short term. It's not possible to pull someone out of addiction yourself. It's not possible to change someone's narcissistic personality disorder and get them to simply snap out of it. It's not possible that can just be done by the individual. It has to be done by the person who's in that position. But what you can do is make them feel good in that very moment. You can pacify them. And the problem is you then develop this codependency, and your worth, who you are and your identity, becomes wrapped up in fixing the problem. And the more you can fix the problem in the short term for this person and for them, whether it's a, you know, a relative, a partner, parent, whoever, this person will then rely on you and they'll make you feel wanted and needed because they know that you're an important part of helping them in this short term, even though they know it's not a proper solution. And it's this kind of vicious circle where both people feed off each other. And this is why it's not a good thing to be codependent or in a codependent relationship. So again, I want to look at what's going on here so you can grasp an even clearer and better understanding and become even more aware of this kind of behavior. Now, the reason why people act like this and become codependent is because a lot of the time it's a fear of abandonment, and it's a prevalent one for these people. Now, I'm not saying that depending on someone is a bad thing. I think in pretty much every single relationship, you depend on your partner to some extent, okay? And there's also a sort of add and flow where someone might need to depend on the other more so than the other way around, and then it might switch and vice versa. And it could be back and forth, and that in and of itself is not unhealthy. That's very normal behavior, and it's not just experienced on a romantic basis, but it can be with many other different kinds of relationship in your life. To be able to depend on someone is actually, again, a healthy thing, and it shows that you can let your walls down and you can let someone else help you. And I think that's one of the first things that you should do when you do want to try and get help. You have to let those walls down to let people in. And being open to this and to some extent vulnerable is incredibly vital. And I always encourage anyone I talk to when it comes down to relationships with people to take that step, to be courageous and offer up some vulnerability, because although at first you might think you'll be judged and people won't be able to help you or respond in the way that you might like, you will also be pleasantly surprised actually how much closer being vulnerable and letting your walls down can bring you to other people, and how much deeper your relationships can become with other people when you are vulnerable with them. The problem is when you're attempting to get your partner to depend on you as much as possible so they don't abandon you, and people have this codependence personality, a lot of the time they don't do it intentionally. A lot of the time it's a subconscious act, and it's very much out of fear, in the sense that they don't want to be abandoned, they don't want their partner to leave them, so they're trying to do all these things, they're scrambling around looking for ways to keep their partner. But it's not out of malice. Most of the time it's not out of malice, but this is the issue. In a normal relationship, you simply naturally depend on each other when it's necessary. In this kind of codependent relationship, what you are doing is you are putting things into practice so that the other person needs to depend on you even more. They need you to fix a problem because they're not going to fix it themselves. This then means the other person becomes the fixer, and that is almost their sole role in the relationship. And that's what makes this person feel validated. Again, the problem with this kind of relationship and this kind of codependency is for the fixer or the enabler, they then find this sense of purpose or base their identity on this constant back and forth of enabling and helping, and it becomes more about that than actually wanting to solve the problem at hand. What can often happen in these situations is when the other person then no longer is codependent and no longer relies on the fixer or the enabler for help and decides to get help for themselves and do something about their situation, let's just say in this instance, an alcoholic mother who has now gone to see a counsellor about her problems or has gone to Alcoholic Anonymous, and the enabler realises this, and then they realise that they're not needed in this relationship anymore. Suddenly they feel like they've got no worth. They're not validated anymore. They think that their partner or whoever it is better off without them. And this can often lead to things like having affairs because they're looking for attention from somewhere else to feel validated. Now, of course, having affairs is a terrible, terrible thing, and there is no true moral explanation for it. But it's often the people who are really, really insecure with themselves, and they can't fully leave a relationship until they're in another relationship. Now, obviously, this is only one reason why someone might have an affair or cheat. You know, affairs happen all the times, and cheating happens all the time for... Well, actually, it doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen for all different kinds of reasons. But in this instance, it is down to the fixer feeling like they do not have a role in their relationship anymore, and they are no longer being validated or needed for their actions. Often, someone who is the codependent one in a relationship, they will feel very threatened if their partner starts making big changes and begins to help themselves. And it's a sad reality. A person who gains all of their self-worth and self-esteem through basically being in an unhealthy relationship and through that desire of being needed, where they don't want to draw boundaries or face any hostility from the other person, because if they do and they start saying no and they start offering help, sorry, they stop offering help and stop doing absolutely everything for this other person, they become too scared that their partner or this other person would become angry enough to leave them or get angry enough and do something hurtful. And this can also happen with narcissistic people in your life, whether it's friends, parents, your partner. And if it's your partner, let's say they're quite volatile and narcissistic, and it's their way or the highway, especially when you're living with them, you might go through the process of thinking that the best thing to do is just to simply get them to love you. But you don't ever want to ruffle any of their feathers, so they constantly need you, because it's likely that they've pushed everyone else away and you're the only one that feels needed by them, and that's where you get your validation from. They might act incredibly irrationally, they might have terrible toxic behavior, they might treat everyone else around them really badly, but you're not going to be the one to stand up to them. You're going to almost even agree with them even when you don't agree. It's almost like you blend your personality into their personality so they can't become angry at you, because you're almost mirroring back to them what they're saying and what they're doing. It's like the easy way out. Yeah, that's okay, baby. Yeah, I agree. No, you're right. That person is an idiot. You're not the idiot here at all. You don't want to step in their way. You would rather agree to disagree in your head for the sake of keeping this person on your side, because you don't want to lose them, even though they're treating you terribly. And again, that comes down to just that lack of self-worth and self-love and depending on someone else, even when they are treating you in this terrible way. You just want to make peace with them and love them and show them that you care so that they stay, because you're so scared of them leaving and your self-worth leaving with them. Another example might be that your partner is spending all of their money on excessive drinking on the weekends, or gambling, or maybe spending their money on drugs, and they then start to not be able to afford to pay the rent that you split. So instead of standing up to your partner and telling them that they need to stop this, they need to stop the excessive spending, and that you're going to have to stop the joint account that you have together and get your own accounts and pay for your own things, and if they blow all their money, too bad. Instead, what you do is you offer to buy all the food shopping for the week and they don't have to spend their money on that. Or you offer to pay all of the rent one month and you tell them that it's fine because you love them and you're supporting them and you want to help them. And in the moment, your partner is so thankful for that. And in this instance, you and your partner think that everything is okay, but your partner hasn't had to reap any of the repercussions of their actions at all. And the same goes for any kind of behavior in any situation that isn't right or that you don't agree with. If you're not letting that person suffer the consequences of their actions, which they need to in order to change, then you are enabling them. You are stepping into that role of becoming an enabler, and as a result, a fixer by buying food, by paying for their rent. You are indirectly and directly actually supporting this kind of behavior. If you really want to help somebody, if you really care about somebody, you have to allow for them to suffer the consequences of their actions, even if this can be quite painful for them and for you to watch, because it's not your responsibility to soften those consequences and make up for their behavior by yourself. And sometimes I get it. When you love someone, when you care deeply about someone, it's hard to tell them the truth because the truth hurts and people hate hearing the truth. But personally, I wouldn't take that away from anyone because that is how people learn. That's how people grow in life. It's how you should, I think, raise your children if you want them to understand the consequences of their actions so that when they grow up and they're in the big wide world, they understand all of this. This now brings me on to the point of why it's so important when you are entering a relationship with someone that you establish boundaries, you establish standards, and have complete transparency and honesty with each other right from the very off. Because it is much easier to do this once you have established things early on. If you see behavior in your partner or someone you're seeing that is a red flag, do not ignore this. Do not ignore red flags early on. I have made this mistake. It bites you back in the ass further down the line. No matter how much you like someone, no matter how much you love someone, how interested you are in someone, how great your connection is with someone, if you notice behavior that is not right or that is unjustifiable that or you don't agree with, then you have to communicate that with this person. And when it comes to the communicating side of things, it's not just a case of saying, I don't like this about you or I don't like what you're doing. Because a lot of the time that kind of initiation will immediately warrant a defensive response. You don't want to cross over the net and be on their side of the court. And I like this kind of, I think of it like this tennis example, okay? You're on your side of the court, they're on their side of the court, you've got the net in the middle. It's their side for a reason. It's your side for a reason. You want to stay on your side of the court, but you want to be able to communicate effectively how it's making you feel and why you don't agree with it. And then you open it up for conversation and work to forming a solution. It's about forming a solution. It's not about I'm right, you're wrong. Of course, this is easier said than done. Trust me, I know, if only it was this easy. But at least thinking about it in this kind of way might help you and your partner in relationships, whatever, approach this kind of thing better. Because the worst thing that can happen is you have unexpressed emotion in a relationship, whoever it's with. Because these unexpressed emotions, they get buried alive and they come forth later in much uglier ways. If you're scared of expressing how you feel for fear of abandonment or them walking away or them not liking you, you need to overcome this by working on yourself. Working on yourself, building up that self-love so that you're not depending wholeheartedly on someone else for your security or happiness. And you can stand up to things that you don't believe in or you don't agree with and voice them in a way that protects yourself. Remember, it's about setting those boundaries. Now, if you're in a relationship with someone who might be a bit of a narcissist or has narcissistic traits, they might try and gaslight you. They might have you thinking that you're delusional and questioning your own judgments in sometimes very manipulative ways. It's also important to be aware of this. Codependent narcissists will make you feel like you're going crazy and that they're always right. And they'll threaten to leave or they'll threaten not to speak to you, which will drum up your fear of abandonment. You have an argument with them and you know deep down what you're saying is completely valid and true and they're in the wrong in this position. Again, it's not about right or wrong, but you know that what they've done isn't right. And they've said, I don't want to speak to you anymore. I don't want to speak, don't talk to me anymore. And they hang up instead of rationally trying to discuss things. But because of your fear of abandonment, you always feel like you're the one who is responsible for solving every problem, for calling them back, for being the one to apologize first. So you do. And the circle continues to go round and round. They know you're always going to succumb and tell them you're sorry and you agree with them and you love them, even when you don't, even when you don't agree with them, even when you're not sorry. But that's your only choice because you're too scared to stand up to them and speak the truth for fear of them leaving you. And so this enabling behavior continues, and so does the narcissist behavior and the codependent relationship you're in. Whew! Okay, I feel like we've sort of whirlwind through this whole topic of codependency and stuff, and I've given you kind of different examples and different things to think about. But to round up this episode and bring it to some kind of conclusion, I mean, I could talk about this for hours and hours. It's such a deep and multifaceted topic, and there are so many avenues to explore. But for the sake of your time, I won't go into that on this occasion. But I like to end things always on a positive note, okay? Not that all of this hasn't been positive, but there's been a lot of dissecting, analyzing, and explaining. I want to quickly address what's one of the solutions to codependent behavior and codependent relationships, alongside building up, of course, your self-love and self-esteem. And that solution is self-awareness. Sometimes self-awareness isn't enough. However, in this instance, self-awareness can actually go a very long way, and you can start to really see your patterns of behavior and very quickly start to identify what is unhealthy for you and what is causing stress and anxiety and damaging your self-esteem and preventing you from loving yourself and living to the fullest and being the thriving version of you that you can be. Now, obviously something like therapy with a professional, like a psychologist, psychiatrist, is one of the best things that you can do. And speaking to people that would probably understand your situation who don't know you is always a very positive solution and can give you a very professional and rational outlook. And that's definitely one of the best things that you can do to help with understanding all of this. And even just outside of this, your own life, your own actions, your own relationships, your own thoughts. Again, I've said to you this before, I've had therapy and it's one of the best things that I've ever done. But in any case, starting off by speaking to people is a very good way of unpacking your mind and putting things out on the table to have a look at. Because if it's all in your head and you're keeping everything in your head, thoughts in your head, issues and problems in your head, it stays in there and it's all jumbled up and it can grow like an infection. And like I said earlier, the problem with infections is that they can spread very, very quickly and can be detrimental. By talking and laying your cards out on the table, whether that be to a close friend or a therapist or your partner, not only are you unraveling your true honest thoughts, which will give you more clarity on the situation, but you are also allowing your walls to drop and you're allowing someone to come in and support you. Not necessarily providing you with a quick solution or giving you the answers that you've been looking for, but certainly you get this feeling that you're not alone with how you feel, and that actually you'll find a lot of other people experience and are currently experiencing what you are feeling and what you go through and what you are going through. Getting help or advice or support from other people is one of the best things that you can do, okay? Because like I said, you get an outside perspective and you can perhaps maybe use tools provided by other people to resolve your own situation and apply to your own life. Or at least you can start putting in place things to help yourself. But ultimately, it does come down to you. You are the only one that can make changes to your life. No one else is responsible for that, and no one else is going to do it for you. And once you realize you have to take absolute responsibility for everything in your life, you then get this sense of control, because you're not relying on anything or anyone else to help you. You are relying only on yourself. And that is a lot less stressful than relying on external factors. In some situations, you might hear a hard truth that you might need to leave a relationship in order to grow, to build up your self-esteem, your self-love, your confidence, all of these very important things that contribute to being a happy person. And this is sometimes a very hard-hitting reality. And if you are a codependent person, you're going to feel terrible if you leave the relationship. And that's completely natural to feel that way, because a part of you will feel that you have let the other person down, or you couldn't help them or fix them. And on top of that, you're going to feel like you're the only one to blame for the relationship breaking down, almost as if you didn't play your part and you weren't good enough for your partner and that's why it didn't work out. And you're going to be met with all of these feelings of guilt and responsibility, and it's probably going to make you feel very uncomfortable. But that is exactly why most people stay, because they can't fathom that feeling. Even when they identify what's going on, they struggle to leave a relationship. So that's a normal thing to go through. And that's why for this particular thing, it's not as easy to say that all you need is self-awareness. All you need to do is speak to someone and everything will be okay. I fully well know that it's not that simple and it's not that easy, but these are some of the first steps that you can take. And I always say, whether it's talking about this kind of thing, whether it's about your fitness journey, you don't need to see the whole staircase. You just need to take the first step. And those first two steps can be self-awareness, stepping outside and having a look and properly thinking about your life, and then taking steps to improve that. And one of those steps being to talk to someone about it and getting help from someone. And just remember, you are number one. Your physical health, your mental health, these are the priorities in your life. Wherever you are in your life, whatever stage you are at in your life, never sacrifice your own self-worth and your own self-love for anything or anyone else. It is so, so important that you're comfortable in your own skin, that you're confident in who you are, and you don't let anyone or anything else destroy that or take that away from you. We are constantly evolving as humans, and we are constantly learning along the way and along this journey that we are all on and that we are all taking. You'll never be complete. You'll never be the complete human being. We all have our faults. We all have our insecurities. We all have our doubts about ourselves. And we all experience moments of low self-esteem. And we have periods in our life where we maybe don't show ourselves as much love as we should do. But this is a part of being human. This is the beauty of it. This is a part of the journey. But so long as you can become more aware of these things and more aware of the kinds of things that I've been talking about today, things like codependency, self-love, identifying areas of your life that might need changing, perhaps in some of your relationships, to ensure that you are the happiest person you can be. That is the most important thing. And this is why I do these podcasts, so that I can bring subjects like this that I've spoken about today to the surface and to your awareness, so that you can walk away and it gives you something to think about. Like I said, I'm not a therapist, I'm not a psychologist, I'm a coach. And talking about these things with you, for me, I take great enjoyment from, firstly, but I know that there are some of you that will really benefit from learning about this and hearing about this. And it might just spark some of you to take action in your own life. I'm going to end it on that. Thank you so much for listening. I know some of this was quite deep and we got right under the surface, but I hope you enjoyed it and you found it as interesting and as fun as I have. Take care of yourselves and I will see you at the next episode. I'm going to try and do one more episode to finish off the season, and that will be 20 episodes. And then I'm going to focus on doing a season 2 in the new year, which is going to be super exciting, something very different. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And I will see you very soon. Bye-bye.